It's Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brings together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. With today's guests and the topic for Encounter, here is Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, we examine the findings and implications of the so-called torture report by the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. While the historic shift in U.S.-Cuba relations is dominating the headlines, the ramifications of the recently released report by the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence assessing the program of harsh interrogation and detention used by the Central Intelligence Agency from 2002 to 2007 during the George W. Bush administration will reverberate for years to come. The summary of the report said, the CIA mistreated prisoners during questioning, that photos and other CIA files present evidence that the agency's interrogation methods were brutal and possibly illegal, that they were poorly managed, and that the agency misrepresented it to the White House, the Justice Department, Congress, and the American people. California Democrat Dianne Feinstein, who chairs the Senate Intelligence Committee, said that under any common meaning of the term, CIA detainees were tortured. She called the CIA's actions a stain on American values. Moreover, the report concludes that these methods were not effective and were not worth the cost to reputation and national security that resulted from the program. President Obama banned the use of the so-called enhanced interrogation techniques when he took office in 2009. Current and former intelligence officials and Republican members of Congress, perhaps with the exception of Republican Arizona Senator John McCain, strongly dispute the characterization of the program and the CIA's actions, arguing that it produced much of the information that led to the successful efforts by the Bush and Obama administrations to roll back the central leadership of al-Qaeda. Well, for further analysis on the CIA torture report, its significance and broader implications, we turn to two distinguished analysts. P.J. Crowley is former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Public Affairs under the Obama administration. He is currently a fellow at the George Washington University's Institute for Public Diplomacy and Global Communications. And Stephen Groves, he's Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation. That's a conservative think tank based here in Washington. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to be here.
P.J. Crowley, before we get into the torture report, I just want to get a quick reaction from you regarding this historic shift we're witnessing in U.S.-Cuba relations. President Obama announced that there will be a resumption of diplomatic ties for the first time in 50 years.
I think this was a step that was inevitable. If you look back 50 years, it's hard to see what the existing approach to Cuba has accomplished. It certainly has not accomplished its stated objectives. So I think that it reflects both a change in strategy and also within the United States, a change in politics. I think this will go slow just because we'll have diplomatic relations, which allows you to have important diplomatic conversations with Cuba, a neighbor of the United States. I don't think we're going to see the end of the embargo anytime soon, but I do think this will put significant pressure on the Castro regime. The expectations among the Cuban people will escalate, and given how brittle the Cuban regime is, they're going to be hard-pressed to deliver on those expectations.
Very good. Well, we'll certainly talk about this more in future programs, but let me get back now to the CIA torture report, as it is called. And PJ, leaving aside for the moment the methodology, which many people criticize, that it was primarily done by the Democratic staffers on the committee and certain people were not interviewed. What about the conclusions of the report? Do you think that the CIA's treatment of suspected terrorists, as the report indicates, amounted to torture or not?
I believe that under U.S. law, if you waterboard a detainee, there are those who would call that torture. I focus primarily on the strategic cost. In 2001, we believe that existing practices and existing institutions were somehow inadequate to deal with an uncertain threat of terrorism to the United States. I certainly understand the uncertainty that contributed to these decisions, but we did take actions that, in retrospect, diverted from our values and for which we have paid very significant strategic costs. I can't tell you, having not served in the intelligence community, whether a particular action yielded valuable intelligence or not. I look primarily at the fact that, you know, the existence of a prison at Guantanamo, the existence of these black sites, which certainly subverted the laws of other countries and were designed to bring detainees not to justice as renditions had previously done, but to use renditions to move people beyond the rule of law, and the enhanced interrogation techniques, regardless of what they generated. I think we've paid a high cost for that. I think we're having the wrong debate here. You know, there's a debate in the United States continuing over whether or not they worked. I think the real debate is, you know, should we use them again? And my recommendation would be no. If I have a concern about the Senate report, it is that normally you have these kinds of accountings of what we did in conflict, lessons to learn. You do that after the war has ended. Mm-hmm. You know, in this particular case, we did release this report in the middle of the war, and I do have a concern that it has certainly in the short term provided opportunities for those champions of human rights around the world,
such as
North Korea, Vladimir Putin, to have their way at American expense. I do worry about what the Islamic State will do, and for, you know, any American or other civilian, you know, held by the Islamic State, this certainly can be used wrongly, but it can be used as a rationale for a harsh treatment against them.
All very good points. P.J. Crowley, I think you've asked the right questions. And we're going to get into all of that as we go through the program. But let me now turn to Stephen Gross for your quick reaction to the report. Do you think that, as the report concluded, the CIA's treatment of suspected terrorists did amount to torture or not? And does the damage done to the U.S. reputation as a result of this perhaps outweigh any information that may have been gleaned through these types of brutal tactics?
Well, those really are the two big questions. On the first one, I kind of take my cue from the report itself, that in 500 pages of text, never uses the word torture, not once. Whatever Senator Feinstein says in her press release, if she wants to call it torture, that's completely her call. But my suspicion is that for whatever reason, she could not get the other Democrats on the Intelligence Committee to agree that it was torture. The report doesn't call it torture. If you're asking for my personal opinion, I'll give you a lawyer answer, which is it depends. Torture is given a very specific legal definition, and you'd have to look at each particular instance and see if these methods, either used alone or in combination, gave rise to serious, severe mental or physical pain and suffering or injury. And I think that would have to be done on a case-by-case basis. Regarding its effect around the world, I completely agree with P.J. Crowley. This is not something that you want to do in the middle of an armed conflict, an ongoing conflict, one that's even escalating in Syria and Iraq with the Islamic State or ISIS or whatever they're calling themselves these days. The problem is that most of the world, our allies and enemies alike, knew 99% of what was in this report already. Mm-hmm. They knew about the interrogations. They knew about the black sites. They knew about Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo Bay, all of the things that they used to recruit more terrorists to their fold and to, again, like PJ says, falsely justify brutality against Americans and others. So the key point that I took away once the report was released was why release it if at bottom what we're really accomplishing in 2014 is providing an additional recruitment tool to our enemies?
If I can respond to that for a second, I worry about the timing of it. Mm-hmm. But I think the report itself, and particularly the debate that the report generates, is important to America as a democracy. And in future conflict, where you set that balance between interests and values. So while I am concerned about the timing, I think the report has done an important and vital function. And we need to determine from a political standpoint in our country and for the American citizenry, give our leadership clear direction in terms of in the future, how do you want to wage the kind of conflict that we're involved in? And ultimately, what among, you know, military options, intelligence options, political options, and so forth, you know, what will eventually win the day? when you're doing battle against the likes of Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. And I do hearken back to the Cold War in many respects, that ultimately this is far more of a political challenge than it is a military challenge. And what we stand for and who we stand with will ultimately be decisive in facing down and minimizing the threat of extreme groups like the ones that we are dealing with.
Indeed. And let me rephrase what the Soufan Group, it's a think tank, an intelligence group based in New York, said in the same vein. They say that whatever propaganda and incitement value that enemies of the United States might find in this report, whether it's the Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, or even autocrats such as Vladimir Putin or the supreme leader in Iran or the Chinese leader or North Korea, that is purely tactical. And while the value of releasing the report, maybe not the timing so much, but the value of releasing the report and acknowledging the past and moving ahead is in our strategic interest, and that to some extent this is a sort of a triumph of democracy, showing the world that we can look at the mistakes made, that, you know, we're willing to look at what we've done, acknowledge mistakes, and it's a sign of a mature democracy, and that in the end that will be the message that people will take away. What do you think about that, Stephen Groves?
Well, I don't know that there's a lot of people around the world who believe that Americans or the United States are incapable of looking at our past mistakes. We toil over our past mistakes like no other nation. This report details a lot of things that the world already knew about the United States, a lot of things that U.S. policy had already taken steps to remedy, including changing our laws to restrict interrogation to the Army Field Manual methods only, including President Obama's executive order banning enhanced interrogation techniques, hearings, constant second-guessing about enhanced interrogations and black sites. It's not as if we're learning anything new here. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, releasing a report that we can all reflect on and learn from. But for example, when the Pentagon Papers came out, it wasn't smack in the middle of the Vietnam War. I believe it was near the end or as it was winding down. This war is very different. You know, it's already gone on for over a decade. It might go for one or two decades more. So for me, it really does, you know, come down to the timing of the report and what we really learned from it. It's important to note that Senator Feinstein didn't include any recommendations in her report. I worked in the Senate. I wrote reports based on investigations that myself and my colleagues had conducted. We always made recommendations. So it seems a little bit strange to me that in addition to not interviewing anybody for their report, they also didn't issue any recommendations. So if we're going to reflect and learn from this report, how is it that in 5 years, Senator Feinstein couldn't seem to muster a single recommendation in reaction to the findings?
Well, we're going to get into that in a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are P.J. Crowley, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Public Affairs. He's currently fellow at George Washington University's Institute for Public Diplomacy and Global Communications. And Stephen Groves, from whom you just heard. He's senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation. I'm Carol Castiel, and we're discussing the politics and substance of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence report on the program of harsh interrogation and detention used by the CIA from 2002 to 2007, also known as the Torture Report. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA and connect with us on Facebook, or send your feedback via email to encounter@voanews.com. Here's a shout out to a new listener, Sheikh Rasal from Jeddah, Saudi Arabia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Well, back to you, P.J. Crowley. Looks like you're itching to get in a word edgewise. And so let's just quickly get over and talk about the so-called politics of the timing of this report, the fact that the report was compiled by primarily Democrats, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think any Republican staffers participated. The fact that there were no interviews conducted with CIA officials, does this tarnish the report and its findings or discredit it in any way?
Well, I think it is important not to dismiss what's in the report itself. And it has generated a worthy debate. You have the former vice president who's out there publicly saying, hey, this stuff worked, which means that we should be prepared to use these techniques again if we need to. And you have the Senate report saying these things did not work. And someone like Ali Soufan, you know, who when he was with the FBI, you know, provided the alternative. And he argues very passionately that you get more and more reliable information, you know, through traditional interrogation than you do with enhanced techniques that for which the subject will simply say anything, you know, to get the pressure to stop. So I do think that there's an important debate to have over whether in the future we will rely on tried and true methodology and we'll rely on key institutions. And we have evolved. You know, today we are now showing that we can successfully prosecute terrorists through civilian courts, that we don't need to resort to a black site or we don't need to resort to Guantanamo, and that we can, in fact, you know, before turning a suspect over to law enforcement, you know, go through an effective interrogation process to find out what a subject knows and use that intelligence rather quickly if it reveals that there's a emerging threat that we are not aware of. So I think we have shown that we can return and rely on existing techniques while going to these extraordinary measures. Clearly, in terms of the politics of the report, the process was actually started, you know, several years ago under former Chairman Jay Rockefeller, continued under Dianne Feinstein. The timing of the report was largely political. Obviously, the Democrats are yielding chairmanship to a Republican Senate, and she wanted to make sure that this was put on the record before that transition is made. So notwithstanding that, you know, Steve and I can say maybe we're not yet in a political environment that allows the kind of debate that we need to have, nonetheless, that debate is very, very important going forward.
Back to you, Stephen Groves. You said that no recommendations were made. But what about the allegations, for example, that appear in the report that showed that the CIA mostly outsourced many aspects of the program and that these so-called contractors were not following procedures, that there was abuse, which was documented? There was cover-up in terms of how the, you know, the CIA portrayed this to the administration, the Bush administration, the Justice Department, and so forth. What do you say about those kinds of allegations?
Well, we've heard the allegations before. The CIA went to the Justice Department to get analysis on whether what they're doing was within the law and to get a definition on torture. The former CIA directors who have, I think, uniformly been critical of this report have all said that this is an outrageous allegation to make, that folks like Jay Rockefeller and Dianne Feinstein were briefed on these techniques and didn't want them to stop, didn't object to them. The contractors were brought in right at the beginning. You know, the Twin Towers went down and the Pentagon was attacked and the president ordered his intelligence agency to get out there and stop a follow-on attack, which almost everyone legitimately thought was going to come. You know, the CIA was not in the business of capturing, detaining, and interrogating terrorists, so they had to ramp up quickly, and it's my understanding that that's why they brought in these contractors. Whether the contractors performed well or not, or got paid too much money for what they did, I mean, those are all things that we can debate in terms of looking forward, but it really is kind of the minutia here. Of course, mistakes will happen when you're not designed to go out into the world and hunt down terrorists and interrogate them. But the CIA and the professionals there, I believe, did their best. These are Americans out there trying to gather this information. They're serving their country. They're under orders from the president. They're seeking guidance from the Justice Department. Is it going to be run perfectly? Of course not. This is a dirty business that was done behind closed doors. And those CIA officers and top officials, they believe that it was a useful program at the end. Even CIA Director Brennan and the president himself won't say that the techniques did not lead to actionable intelligence, the most they'll say is that that's unknowable, whether we needed the techniques to get that intelligence. So I just don't know whether we learned much from the report, especially on the central questions that Dianne Feinstein sought out to prove, I believe, before the investigation even began. She had reached her conclusions and didn't bother to ask a single employee of the Central Intelligence Agency.
But as you said, so going forward, and quickly before I return to P.J. Crowley, do you think that, as former Vice President Dick Cheney said, that he would do it all over again if he had the opportunity? In other words, what do you take away from this report? Should these types of techniques be implemented again, or should something else be done to forestall this type of what many say amounts to torture, or techniques that do not do anything to comport with our values and also do not avert terrorist threats?
Well, let's see what happens if another 9/11 occurs. I mean, it's all well and good in 2014 to navel gaze and say, well, we won't use these techniques ever again because they didn't produce any actionable intelligence. And Ali Soufan says he can get better results by being pals with the terrorists and doing non-coercive methods. I bet on 9/12/2001, somewhere around 99% of Americans would have said, if told about these techniques, do what you have to do to stop another terrorist attack and to bring these people to justice. Now, in 2014, assuming there wasn't another massive attack, those same Americans, I'm sure, would say, well, we're 13 years out. We're not going to be using these techniques anytime soon, but let's have another 9/11 attack and see what Americans would say then.
P.J. Crowley, how do you read it? And the fact of the matter is, some public opinion polls show that Americans are sort of split or say they wouldn't mind if these techniques that were described had to be used again. Again, it's maybe a slim majority. I don't know. But going forward, what should be done? Should there be prosecutions, better legislation? Certainly, President Obama issued an executive order. There have been changes to the Army manual. But are these enshrined in law? Are they enough to go forward?
You laid a lot there on the table. First, in terms of prosecutions, no, I don't think that anyone within the CIA should be prosecuted. I mean, not that every action comported with policy or law, but the real decisive decision was that we, rather than taking clear systems, clear processes, clear lines between what is right and what is wrong, what is legal and what is not, we decided to change to a new system, and we made it up as we go along, and in doing so, we made mistakes. The mistakes were human, but the CIA was not a rogue organization. It was operating with what it thought was the highest level of authorization in the government, and with a legal judgment by the Department of Justice. Now the real question is, to answer the Dick Cheney question, we would do it all again. If we do this all again the same way, we should all have our collective heads examined. We have to learn the lessons, and we can learn lessons. You know, if you think back to World War II, we made an incredibly horrific mistake, you know, during World War II by interning Japanese Americans, you know, within the United States. We inferred that despite the fact that they were citizens and patriots, that somehow they posed a threat to the United States. We would not do that in today's world. So we have made mistakes in the past, and we've learned from those mistakes. Now we have to go forward and make that judgment. I understand the polls that say there's a divided opinion within the body politic, but that's what leadership is about. We have demonstrated, you know, since these early actions, that there are other ways that we can get back, adapt existing systems, but stay well within the law, stay well within the Geneva Convention. We need to make sure that we focus on the right lessons, internalize them. I think we can do what we need to do in this conflict, which to me far more resembles a Cold War than a hot war. And ultimately, what will be decisive is what we stand for and how people perceive the United States. I think we can successfully mitigate the threat of terrorism over the long term by staying well within the systems that we have shown, you know, work well against these kinds of threats.
Stephen Groves, the last word to you regarding lessons learned whether from this particular report or just in general. As you said, the report isn't really revealing all that much new, but the details were perhaps more than people were aware of. Going forward, what lessons do we learn?
Well, the lessons that we learn is that we should probably have a playbook on the shelf if another catastrophic terrorist attack happens on U.S. soil. We didn't have that playbook on the shelf on September 12, 2001. So the CIA couldn't pull it off the shelf and say, okay, this is how we're going to get information from terrorists. We know a lot more in 2014 than we did in 2001. And so we will learn everything and anything there is to learn from this interrogation report, from the black sites, from the results of the interrogations. If another catastrophic attack happens on U.S. soil, I'm sure the policymakers will get together and take all of this under consideration and ask what there is to do next. But the world's a completely different place. Our CIA's mission around the world is completely different than it was in 2001. The report is just one poorly timed piece in the mosaic of lessons learned from 9/11. It could have been released further down the road, but Senator Feinstein, I think, wanted to have her Pentagon Papers moment and released what I consider to be a vanity project, which I think has done more harm than good.
All right. Well, on that note, that's all the time we have, but I have no doubt that we'll be talking about the conclusion of the report and how to better combat threats from terrorism in the many weeks and months ahead. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, P.J. Crowley, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Public Affairs, now fellow at George Washington University, and Stephen Groves. He's senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and that's a think tank here in Washington. And thanks to both of you again for your terrific insights.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Rob McLean. I'm Carol Castiel. Please join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.
Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brought together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. Your host was Carol Castiel. Join us again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.